Space Center, and Baby Yoda was on board.
Baby Yoda, baby Yoda.
Astronomers are proposing a huge telescope on the moon to further research about the Big Bang. According to The Hill, quote, University of Texas astronomer Anna Shower, I think I'll say her name, nicknamed the proposed telescope the ultimately large telescope. It's just really, adding that it would have a liquid mirror over 300 feet in diameter. That's crazy shit. And Free Will has got some great releases for your quarantine turkey day. And as a reminder, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., the Ralphius bottle variants, the whole list of them, we'll talk about that in the last call. But the whole list of them will go on pre-sale tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., available for pickup on Black Friday. I want to remind everybody, tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you subscribe to Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. I don't know if you guys tuned in to Out the Coop Live this week, but we had a great discussion with Lev Hirshhorn from PA Stands Up. I'm absolutely loving these segments where we're doing the interviews with people from around the state, say politicos, organizers, activists. It's been fantastic. We had great feedback from that episode. Thanks for everybody who's tuning out to the shows and so on. It's really great. Last week I think I said that at the end of that show that we would not have an Out the Coop Live on Monday. I might do an Out to Coop Live, but it'll be a little bit more open format. We originally had Thanksgiving plans, and those are gone. So I will be kind of around, but we'll see. I'm going to spend a lot of time with my family over the weekend, so keep up to date on that. And sorry to the folks who are out there on our YouTube show, by the way, for the late startup today. I had a bunch of kid stuff to deal with early, and yeah. So it's put us a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of the time. And my own sense of attention span is kind of fractured right now. Anyways, we help support this show. Look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Simple as that. You can help support Pull No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and level up your support. In times like these, we need to invest in our progressive media infrastructure to keep the media in the movement in the media. And we're in for a fight for our future, man, and I'll tell you, we're in for that fight. We need you. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. If you're still on the fence about becoming a patron, well, you can drop us a few bucks in our tip jar at any amount. Just go to paypal.me/rcpress today. Sean, man, happy coup day. I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of where we're at.
I mean, what else can we say? It's a coup.
It's a coup. All right, good show. We'll see ya.
I love how you just also like just slyly snuck in the China deal.
You like that?
Yeah. that was good. I mean, like, why not take advantage of a fucking crisis when you're like. When your main adversaries in the world is, you know, on fucking fire right now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like here we are, like full blown, like failed state, like.
Yep.
Coup, you name it. I mean, like.
I mean, it's something too, you know, and I have to say, if you look at the, if you look at that trading block too, as well. Right. I mean, it's like 14 other countries. Right. You know, and it's not just like, you know, like the Republicans say, it's all the commies. No, it's like Australia, Japan, you know, it's
the BRICS.
Like, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like you're like, yeah.
And U.S. is not part of that. And now look, I should say before we get into a bunch, you know, what our focus
we're not
on the show
standing
is today,
for trade deals.
But yeah, let's just say this is not like an advocacy for free trade, more kind of free trade stuff. This, if you remember, there was I want to say it might have been back in March, you know, March, maybe a little before that. Maybe it was before the or right around the time of the impeachment hearing. You remember that? A century ago when Trump got impeached. Well,
Did he?
Yeah, he got impeached.
News to me.
Yep. Yep. So like impeached. Russia. They really got us. Anyways, back then there were a series of articles. We actually talked about that on the show. That China was basically saying publicly, like, you know, oh, looks like, you know, no one's holding down the fort. So we're going to use this as an opportunity to
leverage and exploit,
expand China's influence in the world. Right. And that was their stated goal. And they looked at it in terms of expansion to the their work in Africa and on kind of the trading front, wanting to see themselves as the new center. I mean, this has been a long term goal of the Chinese government. And so, you know, again, I you know, these kind of conversations. I mean,
like, but also, like, at this point, if you're an outside actor, like, why wouldn't you be taking advantage of
totally
everything you fucking can?
With totally.
The country just like on fire with the raging pandemic, a coup attempt, like Republicans still trying to steal this election. Like, I mean, the image right now of like what we're looking at, like to like internationals, like people, the international media is just like fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, I mean, when you look at what China just did with this, right, and what's happening elsewhere, but it's kind of like a situation like this, right? You know,
they're setting themselves up to be the next, to overtake the American, like, standing in the world.
Right,
like,
but you think about the way they did it, right? The way they did it is kind of like this. You know, they're sitting in a room with a bunch of other people, right? You're in this place that's, you know, that's usually, you know, the main player is the United States or whatever. And they're just kind of sitting around, right? And there's like, you know, the guy's not showing up, right? You know, the U.S. is not showing up. And there's all this food on the table, right? There's free gifts, right? There's like, you know, little takeaway stuff and all this. And China's like looking around. It's like, really? Nobody wants this stuff? Does anybody mind if I take it? And like, no one answers. Like, all right, here we go. We got it.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you'd be stupid not to at this point, like, for like advancing your own self-interest.
No, and I tell you, you know, look, I'm the last person that's, well, maybe I'll talk a little bit of this maybe in the in today's last call about some China's space endeavors, because I think this is actually it kind of connects directly up with some of the stuff that their space program is doing. And one of, you know, if I'm looking at the writing on the wall about what happens in a Biden administration and what's going to happen to the U.S. space program based upon who some of the moves that are being made, I think China is like looking to pretty much do the same thing there. But we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah.
The big news, I guess I'm trying to avoid talking about the freaking coup.
I don't know. No, I think we should. I think people should be fucking pissed about what's going on. This absolutely has to be a rallying cry for the Democratic Party and the left. Like, you know, like, yeah. I feel like there's complacency, you know, maybe not, you know. But, like, it's just been, like, they're just so incompetent with what they're doing, where it's like it's not going to work, but you're laying down the groundwork for future attempts to undermine our democracy. And like, this is just like, I mean, they have to pay the fucking ultimate political price for this. Like, there's just no other way where like we have like to, you know, use Grover Norquist's words, take it to the bathtub and drown the Republican Party. Like, they cannot exist as a movement after this. They're a threat to our democracy. They're showing that right now. We've been saying this for years.
Yep.
And they're actually going forward with a fucking coup attempt. It's going to fail, but it's like, this is the fucking disregard they have for our democracy.
But look, I mean, look, I told you this on the phone the other day, right? So I've been, you know, My friend's Ben.
Like, I think people should be absolutely pissed and livid about this. Well, and this should be like an organizing rallying cry.
And it should be, should be alarm bells too. I mean, people should not actually be like dismissing this as just a bunch of bullshit, right? Because, you know, I've been trying to kind of formulate my perspective on this between this conversation between my friend Ben and my friend Stu, right? My friend Stu lives over in Northern Ireland. Ben lives out in Nevada. we all went to college together, good friends and stuff. And you have these kind of conversations. And Ben is kind of like, I think, you know, he's been on the side of, you know, look, this is a really fairly serious thing. We need to be like operating on all cylinders and we need to be freaking out about this stuff, right? I'm probably mischaracterizing stuff a little bit here, but I'm trying to draw it out. And Stu's kind of like, ah, you guys are just a laughing stock, right? You guys can do anything right now, right? But that's kind of like the back and forth. And, you know, my perspective on it has been something like this has been, you know, they are a laughing stock. This is a clown car. This is like clown fascism, but it's clown fascism.
Yeah, right? I mean, Hitler was a clown fascist.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that most, like, is that all it takes is for there to be some kind of, you know, it might be something that is completely off the table. Like, everyone tends to focus on, well, will these lawsuits kind of be made good? And I'm like at some level, it doesn't matter, right? At some level, like, yes, they're all going to fail. I mean, with the exceptions of some, like, really marginal cases. I mean, you know, there was that one case that they actually won, and it changed something like, you know, a few dozen votes, right, in Georgia, which was, like, you know, insignificant to the overall totals, right? So, so we're going to see that kind of stuff play out. But, you like, this is how these people work, right? I mean, you know, Chris Hayes actually said this last night. He said, you know, you can't get over the fact that you have these people that are so incompetent and such grifters and such and like absolutely just like laughing stocks like Giuliani, but they continue to like get lucky and like fail upwards and find themselves in these positions to grift more. And that's how they work, right? So what happens if there's some sort of like catastrophe? What happens if there is one state legislature that decides to kind of like throw its electors over, right? I mean, that's what it feels like. We've been on this tightrope for a long time, is that it just takes the right crisis to tip things in the really, really dark directions.
And I mean, they're trying to intentionally cause a crisis to either get this in the Supreme Court, which I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think the court's going to take this up, but like, do you want this fucking court like making that decision? I mean, like, people are like relying on our institutions right now, and that's just dangerous. I can't do that. Like, I can't in good faith rely on our institutions at this moment, especially how our government's been hollowed out. You know, the courts have been packed. Like, no, we have to rely on collective action at this point. And like,
exactly.
I feel like I'm waiting for the labor movement to call a strike in some of these states. Because that's why I feel like it's going to have to take at this point. Well, like, start having like rolling strikes or like demonstrations.
Well, I worry. This was, you know, we saw all those plans leading up to the election, right? All the plans leading up to the election to defend this if there was an attempt to steal the election. And, you know, I really think the message to every organization that's out there that's been organizing around this stuff, like, that's got to, I hope to God that is in your plans, right? Right up to Inauguration Day. And then on Inauguration Day, you do not demobilize, because we are going to need to fight for every little thing that we need right now. Even if Biden is, you know, kind of like finally gets inaugurated. I mean, you know, this is why I put the thing in about Marco Rubio. I mean, Marco Rubio is on some kind of, you know, talk show talking about what's going to happen and what's going to happen in the Biden administration. He's already saying out loud publicly that we're going to fight because Donald Trump, we saw how the Democrats were unfair to Donald Trump's appointees, so that what we're going to do is we're going to block all of Biden's appointments, right? The whole idea that the Democrats have been unfair is like, what, number one, laughable.
Fucking laughable.
Right, totally. I mean, totally laughable. But that's all they need is a premise, right? They've shown us that's it. All they need
is a
premise.
They play the fucking
victim. Yeah, exactly. Just, I mean, like, right now, we got this freaking past week. Democrats are voting for Trump appointees to judges.
Yeah, like, I mean, this shit has to fucking break. Stop. Yeah.
I mean, if these were any even close to normal days, we would be shouting up from the rooftops about this stuff.
Yeah, instead we're worried about this fucking coup that's going on.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, it's just like, I know, I mean, like,
Mitch McConnell sitting there freaking laughing his turtle laugh, like, you know.
I wonder how much fucking money is going into Georgia now with these races.
My God. Yeah, we didn't even put that. We didn't put that in the thing.
Like, yep. I'm sure the Democrats, people are flooding money into those Georgia races. And then Lindsey Graham, I mean, also Lindsey Graham, we didn't talk about this, so I was speaking about Georgia. Like, the fact that, like, Lindsey Graham is fucking leaning on a state, fucking Secretary of State from not even his home state, from a different, like area, from a different state.
Sean.
Like,
they're neighbors.
I mean...
They're just having a neighborly conversation.
Like, but like,
Sean,
okay,
don't, so no, like, look at this. Look, come on. You're sitting there. Like,
this is a fucking absolute crime. I mean, like, I also like think that, like, I mean, like, we cannot allow the Biden administration to just let these people fucking walk in after this is all done with. Like, fucking, there are people who are going to have to go to jail. For the past, like, so many, what's been happening over the past, throughout this pandemic, and right now. And, like, Lindsey Graham, making a really good case is why he should be the first fucking person to get locked up.
Exactly. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, he's, like, it was, like, hilarious, you know,
him fist bumping Kamala Harris on, the, like, the floor.
I don't even know what to do with that.
Are you kidding me?
Can I just say, that is an image from this week. That I literally don't have the energy to put somewhere and file it in my brain. The
process.
It's just like, it's just, I absolutely have no place for that. But I, you know, the fact that Lindsey Graham could be sitting there and saying, like,
fucking playing his own coup games.
I'm just, like, I was just asking some questions. I was just
no, you weren't.
Asking
the fucking
some questions.
Secretary of State's like, you want me to fucking junk the election?
Sean, don't you know? If you got then, a like, also, if you got a pipe that breaks in your house, Sean, don't you turn to your neighbor to ask him for some suggestions?
And then also, like, the thing what happened in Michigan, like, you know, we're
Michigan
talking about
this last is time well, it's happening. Not even happened. It
well,
is
like,
happening.
What happened with the county officials first? Like, I want to talk about this. Like, this is what, like, the conservative movement has enabled.
Yeah.
For the past decade, over their, over their duties as government. Like, you know, we saw this with court cases with like the woman with the gay wouldn't issue the marriage licenses, like using their like moral justification not to do this. Like, the conservative movement has enabled this behavior to happen on a county-wide basis, and it caused a fucking, like, almost caused a fucking crisis, or is causing a crisis right now.
Yeah,
because they don't want to certify the election where all the black voters lived in the county.
Well, they did want to certify, but then they certified. Now they want to rescind their certification, right?
Because they signed an affidavit, which is like another thing that's like fucking hilarious. It's talking point from the right wing about all these affidavits being signed. Affidavits don't mean shit. Like,
I said words and I signed my name to that thing.
Yeah. So.
So let me just read. So we talk about where we are in Michigan right now. So we remember, you had these, you know, all they were supposed to do is certify the vote, right? You had the two Republicans, like, so it's a bipartisan, you know, thing, because we only have two freaking parties in this country because we're that backwards. So they to certify the vote, and the Republicans refused to do this, right? Refused to certify. So without their certification, they say, well, no, we're not going to certify this. Then there was a public discussion of this, right? And people were like, what the frick are you doing? Right. Especially kind of try to kind of disenfranchise, like, you know, the kind of the blackest city in the country. Right. And you think, you know, black folk are just going to stand by and let that happen. Right. I mean, we got a little bit of the history in this country of this stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And so what they do is they show up and they go. And so finally they say, OK, no, we're going to. OK, we're you know, we're going to certify. I guess we shouldn't do this. And now they want to go the other way. So that happens. That throws this little crisis in the works, right? Now, they're supposed to certify, I think, on Monday, right?
Yeah.
So let me just read you this, where we are now, right? So that fails, and this is where we are now. This is from the AP. So President Donald Trump summoned Michigan's Republican legislative leaders to the White House for an extraordinary meeting Friday amid a long-shot GOP push to subvert the Democratic process that handed the battleground state to Democrat Joe Biden. Two people familiar with the matter told the Associated Press that Trump invited Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey and House Speaker Lee Chatfield write those down and remember them. They agreed to go, according to a state official aware of this leader's plans. The two officials spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were discussing private conversations. It was not immediately clear what the meeting would be about. Neither Shirkey nor Chatfield commented. So, like, yeah, it's totally unclear. They just did his. Trump was like, got a list of things. Oh, yeah, I wanted to invite state leaders from. Oh, yeah, I guess I should invite Michigan. We haven't invited Michigan yet. Let's have them to the thing. No, of course. So we've got the two top, because look, Michigan's legislature is dominated by Republicans. Republicans' leaders are going to come to the, you know, come to the White House, and they're going to talk about what you can do. Now, that paragraph, you take that paragraph from the Associated Press written about any other freaking country, what would you be thinking right now?
A co-attempt.
I mean, how...
Like, we would fucking go after people for this. Like, we would fucking...
Right. I mean, how much mileage are we actually going to expect out of American exceptionalism? Seriously. Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, look, that car, right, you know, has not been in for a freaking tune-up, right, in decades, number one. Right? Number two, we've got every evidence to the contrary that all the kind of, like, the norms and mores of the, you know, of what held this country together thus far are just that, right? That there's no there at the end of the game. It's some weird freaking postmodern exercise in governance or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, he is intentionally setting this country on fire, and it's like we have to respond as a movement because of this. We can't right. we can't be complacent over the next 4 years. Like, it's just going. This is going to be a fucking battle we're going to have to fight.
It is. And it's, you know, and this is where I really hope that, you know, the people that really got up to defend the election, right, in the week following the election are not going away. Because, you know, like, we've got to fight it. And at the same time, I know people are freaking exhausted right now. Right. And, you know, it's like the idea that you could finally breathe a sigh of relief only to be told, nope, sorry, you're back in the game. That's where we're at. So, I mean, this is crazy. I mean, you know, I don't know. The level of insanity, I think, was perfectly illustrated by the fact that Giuliani melted on TV this week. Right. I mean, he started literally like leaking right out his zombie juice, right, all over his face and stuff like that in the middle of a press conference.
Did you see IATSE responding to that?
No.
IATSE, the International Stage Union, Stagehand Union, responded and said, this wouldn't have happened if he hired union makeup artists.
That's for sure. I mean, people are still claiming it was hair dye. I still think it was zombie juice, man. I think that guy leaked. I think the seams leaked.
Well, okay, so now like this clown show, right? Yeah. This like fucking clown show. Like, what are the odds that he has COVID?
You just said before you went on the show.
His son got it. I mean, like, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if he gets it.
Okay, can I just say something? Okay, this is totally disgusting, right? But I'm going to say it anyways. Like, I had to watch this over and over again. There was this guy who posted this up on TikTok, right? And so Giuliani at that press conference, this is not getting the coverage that it should, right? So this might have been before he started leaking. It was... He's standing off to the side, and that the woman lawyer, right? I'm forgetting her name right now. She was up there. She was kind of giving her spiel. He's off to the side. So the wide camera shot, it shows him, and he pulls out a tissue. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
Okay, so he pulls out a tissue. He blows his nose into the tissue, right? So just think of, stay with me here for a folks, especially for those folks who are listening just on the podcast. So you blow the tissue, and you've got it in your hands. That tissue is kind of like in a little triangle, right, with all the gook inside. He takes it, he opens it up, he folds it so the boogers are on the outside, right? He pats it with his hands, right? And then he wipes his face with it. The sweat on his face, he wipes it with the gooey side of the tissue that he just blew his nose into. And then he goes up to the podium.
Okay, so I'm actually like watching... I found a video of it on Facebook.
Okay.
And on Twitter.
It is like, I mean, I just like, I'm watching that and I'm like, this can't be. I've like literally watched
this guy,
it probably
this
20
guy
times.
Is like, this guy's doing like a play-by-play commentary of it.
Yeah, that's probably the one. I'm sure it's probably the one that I saw.
Yep. Just doing a straight up play-by-play.
That's exactly it. No, he takes it and he folds it with the police on it. It's like, it's remarkable. So, but I mean, you know, I hate to even have to talk, but like literally that was just insane. And then, you know, like, he seemed to be the only one up there that was sweating so profusely. Right. And so
he's under pressure. He's sweating from the pressure, man.
Well, maybe. Or he's sweating for the COVID. Right. I mean, I guess that little
is a fucking raging fever right now.
Exactly. I guess that little chamomile tincture from Mr. Pillow is not helping him out these days. Right. I mean, whatever. But so,
yeah,
so
he could have just like getting out of the shower. You don't know. I mean,
so look, I mean, I know, look, this is
like in a room, no one wearing fucking masks, like so fucking crowded. Yeah. I'm telling you. The fucking like,
well, we saw like what Chuck Grassley go down, the two oldest members of the Senate go down this week. Right. Or maybe the House.
Rick Scott this morning.
Rick Scott. Really?
Yeah. Rick Scott has, no, I mean, this shit's real. It's going to be like, you know, I wonder, like, how many fucking legislators may die from this, locally and, like, you know, from the fucking, like, we're going to have fucking special elections because of, like, Chuck Grassley or someone like that not giving a fuck about COVID. And then it's just going to pave the way for some fucking QAnon conspiracy theorists to, like,
right,
get in office if these people fucking kick it.
I mean, yeah, the script writes itself, right?
I mean, like, yeah, no, these people aren't going away, like... Like, if you think Mastriano, like, this just fuels their fucking fire for 2022.
It does.
Like, fucking politics is going to get nuts over the next couple of years.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, so we've got to deal with that, right? I mean, obviously, this is something that we seriously got to pay attention to and, like, again, mobilize around, especially around on these points where, because things, I mean, God, everything feels so fragile in that regard. So, that's on the one hand. So, you got to pay attention with that. And, like, you know, again, we've said this on the show for as long as we've been talking about this, is that we're not going to see a repeat of what we saw in Obama for the most part, especially among the progressives and the left, right? Everyone's not going to just go back home and kind of accept the idea that kind of, you know, we got this, you know, in terms of, you know, hand it over what Obama did, say, I got this, you know, and then everybody went home and kind of went back to their lives. Progressives and the left have been pretty clear that no. Look, we got to get rid of the orange dude, right? We've got to get rid of the crisis, right? The most acute problem, so that we can address the chronic issue. And Joe Biden basically represents that chronic condition, right? So that we're going to immediately get back in there and push the Biden administration to do the right thing, and that includes the right things on climate, that includes the right things in terms of wealth inequality, the terms about kind of the wage gap. I mean, you could go run through the list of crisis right now. And there's some real concerning issues now. So I mean, this is already, we see in the appointments of the cabinet, we've seen several things. I didn't put this in the intro today, but like, so for example, you watch what happened in the discussion around student loan debt this week, right? So initially there's this proposal that comes out, said we're gonna eliminate $50,000 of everybody's student loan debt right away, right? Then there's the kind of like, you know, the kind of the neoliberals say, well, how are other people gonna feel? Those people who actually had to pay the loans, and we can't do that to them because it would be unfair. And then this slowly gets whittled down to, well, okay, maybe not 50,000, maybe it's 25,000. Maybe it's not 20,000, maybe it's 10,000. Well, maybe it's $10,000 to get rid of, but you have to meet all these kind of certain conditions, right? I think you put it on Twitter, so we're gonna like means test it, right?
Yeah.
That's a very concerning move, which is why the pressure has to be there. And I think that those two instances that I did talk about already are flags, right? Especially when it comes to the climate crisis, right? When you've actually got Michael McCabe from DuPont, right? The guy who helped to like try to, you know, get DuPont to go around regulations around a chemical that is showing to be causing all sorts of health issues, cancer causing, and does not break down, right? That's a real issue. Cedric Richmond, right? You know, the biggest recipient of fossil fuel money in the House, who's going to be the liaison to the climate movement. That's a big problem, right? So, I mean, we're not going to go away. And so, you know, I got in this little back and forth on Twitter about these guys, you know, about what the Sunrise coming out basically saying, you know, hey, we're going to hold Joe Biden accountable. Had like, you know, be brave, Joe Biden, right? Big signs down in Philadelphia outside his campaign office. And some folks on Twitter being like, wow, what do they expect they actually going to do? Right? You know, what do they actually want? Right? You know, I'm like, shh. That's why I keep on plugging the day one agenda, right? The day one, just search that up. Just search up the American Prospect day one agenda. Search that up and go look at that. It's just showing what you can do through kind of executive authority, not even executive orders, executive authority by just carrying out and enforcing existing laws. That's the kind of thing that we need. So, you know, on the one hand, yes, we got to prevent a coup. On the second hand, we have to kind of keep on digging in, right? You know, it's kind of like, I think that, you know, the mantra right now has got to be walk and chew gum, walk and chew gum, walk and chew gum. We can do more than one thing at once. And this, of course, all has to happen in the midst of one of the biggest outbreaks of the coronavirus that you know, the country has seen. Where there's no leadership whatsoever. They're allowing it to go free right around the holidays where people, I mean, you watch what's going to happen. People are going to ignore the stuff for Thanksgiving, and they're going to get the worst kind of present they can have for Christmas. People are going to lose their lives. So, I mean, yes. So if I can take a few minutes to talk about, like, Giuliani leaking just to kind of give me a little bit of laughter, I'll take it. So, crazy. Yeah. I guess the one good news here is that the Charlie Brown Christmas special will be able to air for the rest of our public. You will not need Apple TV in order to watch it, because Apple TV, of course, bought the rights to all those Charlie Brown specials. Not only are the Charlie Brown Christmas special is going to air, right, but also, I guess, the day after Thanksgiving, or day before Thanksgiving, or day of Thanksgiving, the Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving special is going to air, right? So that was good news. It's going to air on PBS, right? But The Grinch Who Stole Christmas is still kind of like out there, and it's going to be airing on NBC. So there is that. We got that to look forward to. We'll talk a little bit about our Thanksgiving plans in today's last call, but Charlie Brown has been saved for the moment, right? And I think it's just in time too, because if anybody saw the footage of the Rockefeller Christmas tree going up on Saturday, it was let's just say it was Charlie Brownie.
It was on brand for 2020.
It was on brand 100%. All right, Sean, anything you want to add in before we go to the next segment?
No, nothing really.
All right.
Nothing came across the Twitters.
Yes, exactly. All right, so we're going to go to a little break, and when we come back, we will talk about a lot of the fun stuff happening right here kind of in our own backyard. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I remind you, you become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress, or you can drop us a little tip in the chip jar right now by going to paypal.me/rcpress. This is Kevin Mahoney, founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1888. That was the day that William LeGrand Bundy is credited with inventing something that has become a daily part of life for millions of workers. His time recorder was a time clock that could record when workers arrived and left their jobs each day. The clock would record the time on a paper tape when a worker inserted his or her individualized numbered key. Bundy was a jeweler and an inventor from New York. After inventing his time clock, he went into business with his brother Harlow and founded the Bundy Manufacturing Company. With the growth of factories, there was more and more demand for time clocks. They were considered more exact and efficient than human timekeeping. Keeping track of hours worked and labor costs became an essential part of squeezing every drop of profit out of the industrial workforce. The Bundy brothers located their company in the city of Binghamton in southern New York. Business thrived. Other inventors put their own twist on the time clock. At the turn of the 20th century, the Bundy Company merged with several other timekeeping outfits, forming the International Time Recorder Company. Workers across the United States, Canada, and Europe had their work hours recorded by international time clocks. Later, the company became part of International Business Machines, or IBM, one of the worldwide leaders in workplace technologies. Over the years, new innovations have been introduced to employee timekeeping, such as time cards and computer-linked swipe cards. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coup podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney sitting here with asymptomatic coup survivor Sean Kitchen. It's very good. I've been noticing, just this is kind of a side note before we kind of get into this stuff, that we've had a little bit of a lag on our YouTube stream today. So I apologize for those folks who are out there. I noticed it that for whatever reason, we're having some issues with the software making the transition from kind of the intro screens into the main show. That happened. I got that fixed at the top of the show, but it just stuck again just now. Just I apologize for that. So we'll get that straightened up over here. But I do appreciate, excuse me, those of you who are tuning out. So here in PA, right? Show me a couple big wins here, right? Some good news when it comes to PA Senate, Democratic Senate leadership.
Katie Muth and Maria Collette both got into leadership positions, awesome. Senator Muth took out Senator Biscola in the leadership spot. You know, the Maria Collette beat Larry Farnese. And then, yeah, Santa Ciro came pretty close to defeating Senator, I think Senator Williams for the whip.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, the very fact that you had all these kind of contested contests like was great to see from the get go.
Yeah, so there's the contested contests, but also like I think you're starting to see the influence the 2018 class has on the caucus. Mm-hmm. You know, we had like seven or six senators elected, all very progressive. You know, very like progressive, and they formed this block within the caucus. So like. They almost so like, you know, they have majority plurality rule in a minority caucus within the Senate.
Right.
And so, you know, like they are now a driving force within the Senate as a block. And they're also a driving force within the caucus. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how their influence grows over the next couple of years, especially with, you know, Nikhil Saval and Amanda Cappelletti into the caucus. So, you know, they're going to be a driving force with progressive politics in Pennsylvania for the next decade.
That's fantastic. And, if, you know, and I think that I do think.
And especially as Democrats are poised to take the chambers, you know, in 2022 with the senators who are up for reelection and the new maps that are going to be in place. Like, this is setting up really well for the long term.
Well, you know, I think it's also super important that you've got with Katie Muth and Maria Collette, both of whom were kind of outspoken about the sexism within the kind of legislature. The caucuses, right? And the leadership. The fact that they had, you know,
Katie Muth was that had a fucking mark on her back since before she even got elected with Senator Dalen Leach.
Exactly.
Supporting the Republican, Jim Rafferty, in that race, you know, basically saying that Katie Muth would be irrelevant to everyone's lives.
Yep.
And you now look at, like, you know, Dalen Leach is out of the Senate in disgrace because of his sexual harassment issues. And, you know, him just fucking embarrassing himself with the lawsuits and all he filed against the people speaking out against him. You know, like, you have, it's a total seat change pretty much within the caucus. And, you know, like, these two women, these two senators earned their spots in leadership with how hard that they worked over like the past couple of years.
Right. And well, you know, and I don't even think we talked about this. Right. And I don't think we talked about this last week, but McClinton. Right.
Yeah.
You've got like last week. I think it might have been right before the show.
Joanna McClinton.
Yeah.
Is the first African-American woman ever elected to a leadership position within the Senate within the General Assembly.
Right. She's now the House Democratic Minority Caucus. Right. Exactly.
As the House Minority Leader. No, I mean, she's going to be really good. She's a public defender. You know, I think she's going to be a really good leader on the issues.
Yeah, I remember when we got off last week, we got out of the show. I kind of saw the news come up. I was like, oh, man, I wish we had a chance to talk about that. Because, I mean, that's huge. It's huge to see, you know, the kind of shifts that we're seeing in the, you know, in that leadership, I think is going to have, like, wide-ranging impacts. So,
yeah.
Big deal. Very, very excited to see that. I was also excited to see this week you had the on Refinery 29 had an excellent article on basically profiled a whole series of Pennsylvania women of color who are organizers and spent the past 4 years organizing across the state of Pennsylvania, or the Commonwealth, if you say. And the, you know, it was basically looking at how they put together these counter revolt rallies, and was one of the kind of best profiles of Pennsylvania based organizers I've seen in a while. So
also, I think like one of the best stories on the that like really talked about the counter revolt stories, the counter revolt rallies. Yep. I don't think there was there has been that much coverage at all.
Yep.
About the rallies that have happened, you know, like compared to the outside coverage that these fucking Trump rallies are still getting. Like, but I mean, I feel like that they still have an impact. Like, you know what I mean?
No, exactly. So here's
and what, it's also like really looks into the work that like the past 4 years that like, you know, people like Kenita Kenner has been doing with We the People and the Keystone Budget and Policy Center, you know, like the organizations that they work for, CASA, you know, immigrant driven organizations, you know, what PA stands up with. Yeah, it's a really good, really, really good profile on a lot of the organizers who have been just been working their asses off the past 4 years.
Exactly. I want to read a paragraph from the story too, because this is one of the things that, you know, gets you right on the nose. Like, quote, say this effort to protecting voting rights was led by a steering committee of groups, including Pennsylvania Stands Up, One Pennsylvania, CASA in Action, Make the Road Pennsylvania, and SCIU, who worked along with dozens of organizers around the state, mobilizing under one mission, count every vote. Quote, as we saw Trump and his allies trying to undermine our democracy in the lead up to the election, we knew grassroots mobilization would be essential. Hannah Lorison, the executive director of PA Stands Up, tells Refinery 29. That's the kind of level of coverage it was in this piece, which was phenomenal, right? We've been talking about this on the show, right? About, you know, the plans to basically defend the election, that were in the works well before the election day. And they moved up, and the fact that they're getting credit and getting highlighted is awesome. Amazing. Yeah
And it's also the great work from PA Stands Up to get these stories out there as well and promote these stories around. They've been really good in all of this. Also self plug.
Yeah. Oh, you have something to self plug on this one? Really?
Yeah No. So Refinery 29, PA Stands Up forwarded a couple of my photos of Kadita and other, you know, a couple women holding mother and daughter, holding Black Votes Matter signs from the rallies. And it was an awesome, it's awesome seeing those photos get out there.
Yeah, they were great. I mean, I remember, I think I came across this article separately, right? We didn't even talk, I didn't know that, you know, it was coming out. And I saw it and I'm like, hey, it looks like you got some traction in there. So, it was, I mean, they're great photos. And then my favorite one is the one, you know, you got the two women that are standing there with It's About Us sign and the Black Voters Matter signs like in front of the Capitol, which is I love that one.
Yeah. No, this was a great experience for me. You know, we had our phone call this morning. We had to brag about things we worked on this year. So. We were forced to.
You were forced to.
I
bragged. I know
about
it usually
photos.
Takes like a gun to your head so that you, before you start talking about your, you know.
Well, I mean, I wanted to talk about the stuff with, you know, our organization with Spotlight, but for personally, I picked the photos, and yeah, I mean, like it was an awesome experience getting asked by Hannah to shoot these photos. I went out, rented a lens, and no, I mean those rallies and the photos I got from that are definitely something I'm proud about, like, and will definitely follow me for my career.
No, it was good. And I think it was good that you picked out something, right, that wasn't about what you contributed to an organization or what are the kind of things that you did to help out as part of an organization, but things that were really about you. I mean, that was really important.
No, these organizations definitely got their use out of these photos. You know, like, in the drop chat, like when we were talking about this, they're definitely like a lot of people were thanking me for the photos. Like they use them for email, social media, and so many other things besides like this Refinery 29 article. And no, I mean, like, it's great, make money off of this, but it's also like awesome to see this type of work be used for something that's like a once in a lifetime experience. And hopefully we don't have to go through this again in 4 years.
No shit, man. No shit. No shit. Well, you know, think about a gift that keeps on giving. Mikey Stacks, right? The former lieutenant governor reappeared and reemerged. It looks like his new acting career is going well.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So I was sitting in committee the other day waiting for the voter suppression shit to happen with the House State Government Committee and had a staffer ask me if I saw this video. And I said, no. And he was like, you have to give that to me right away. So, you know, I got the video, watched it. It was just, we were watching it beforehand in committee and people were just like looking at us like, what the fuck are you laughing at? And put it up on Facebook and Twitter. And it just, you know, instantly went viral because it's Governor Mike Stack moonlighting for UNESCO as a UNESCO stand to save Stonehenge.
It was just, I just found it just weird is I guess what I'd have to say.
I thought it was hilarious. Like, I mean, yeah, it's weird. That's why I think it's why it's funny. Cause it's just weird. Like him just standing for Stonehenge with like a really thick Northeast Philly, like harder Northeast Philly Irish accent. No, it was just pretty awesome.
Yeah, there you go. Mikey Stacks, congratulations. Getting on board with Stonehenge. That's fantastic. It's funny because I never would have associated him with, like, you know, a real Stonehenge proponent or someone who's, like, you know, out there looking to defend world kind of heritage sites and stuff. But good for him.
Yeah.
Hope the paycheck was worth it.
I mean, like, also, I mean, like, good on him. I mean, like, he's living his best life right now. I mean, how the fuck would you respond after being in the fucking General Assembly for all that time? I mean,
I think, you know, I just think I'm with you, right? I'm like, live your best life, man. You know, it's like,
he's not dealing with the bullshit of Harrisburg anymore.
I, you know, it's definitely.
I think it's funny. I think it's hilarious. I think, like, it's awesome to, like, post it online and, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny for the clicks.
Yeah.
But like, but like, hey, he's not dealing with the bullshit. Like, what else is
No kidding, man. It's like, hey, have at it, man. Have at it. Like, little comedy, little shots, you know.
Standing for UNESCO World Heritage Site.
That doesn't suck.
Heritage.
Yeah. That was the funniest thing. You know, one of the, it's a World Heritage Site. You got this, this strong Philly accent. It was great.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's good to know. See, it's good to know that, you know, you can make it. You don't need to hide your filliness. It's good. So the other thing we should talk about, just, I mean, the COVID, and we can talk about this as kind of a lead into, well, how about this? Let me talk about the Pashi stuff, then we'll talk about the COVID stuff, then we'll break that into Thanksgiving. So this week, there were several Pashi University presidents who left, and they elected a new president up in Edinburgh. Look, I mean, these folks see that, you know, it's a sinking ship and they're looking to get out before they're forced out or before things kind of really go south. And, if you recall that there's multiple mergers where, schools are being forced together as part of the Posse's new plan. And, you know, I really do think that we're going to have a show that's just going to be about that. We're going to bring some people on to talk about what's happening with Pashi because I had toyed around with a little bit before, but I just got to find the right people to talk about this, right? Because, you know, to be honest with you, I think it's – I want to hear from folks who are involved with the fight. That want to talk about what's happening in higher education, what's happening to the Pashi system, and not just, you know, get, say, you know, union PR spin or, you know, activist PR spin about kind of what the messaging should be. Because I look at this stuff and it's an absolute crisis of what's going on here in public higher education in the state. I mean, you've got kind of retrenchment letters that are out. You've got over 100 faculty that are going to lose their jobs. You got programs that are going to be eliminated. You got the promises that there's, you know, these universities are going to merge, or they're going to come back together, and everything's going to be fine and hunky dory. Students are organizing against what's happening, and this is going to fundamentally kind of change what happens in public higher education. And I don't necessarily think that's necessarily in a good way. And, you know, I look at this Chancellor Greenstein, right? And, you know, this is a Silicon Valley dude who worked at, forgot of, you know, Microsoft thing. I get the feeling he could really, you know, give a shit, right? For him, it's about the structure and kind of looking all these kind of neat plans and nice little graphs that you're going to put out and all that kind of stuff. And meanwhile, people are going to pay the price.
Just being the technocrat.
Just being the technocrat, right? It's exactly, you know, again, I could belabor the point if I wanted to, is that, you know, this is precisely the kind of stuff that I was warning about early on. I mean, all you got to do is read the guy's background and to figure out what's going to go on. And I was frustrated, as you all know, with the treatment that our union leadership gave to him, like welcoming him with open arms. Yes, we're going to do this collaborative thing. And you could see what was going to happen. I could see, at least. Several of us could see what's going to happen. He's going to get past the contract negotiations, right? Get everybody on board feeling good, and then he's going to drop the hammer. And it's what he did. And now there's all people, oh my God, I can't believe he made all these promises. I'm like, I don't know how we expect anything different. So anyways, I mean, this, you know, there's a lot of this has been going through my mind lately. We had a piece that came out in, I think it's like Working Class Studies or Working Class Labor Studies. I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me. I should have thought about this before class, our podcast today. But my friend Seth Kahn down at Westchester and I were interviewed for by, you know, one of my former co-author, Rachel or Reedner and Gordon, and we got interviewed for this piece about the ABSCUF strike in 2016, right? And that's been published. It's published out in Duke University Press and so on. And Duke University Press wants to do this kind of updated blog about it and things like this, and wants commentary about where things are, what, you know, what's happened since then. And it's a tough thing to talk about. But you know, you've heard enough of me talk on this podcast about it, where you know that I feel that we've lost a tremendous amount of kind of power by giving up on the organizing, the power that we built for the strike, and turning to this kind of like labor management cooperation nonsense. But you know, it is what it is, and it's having impacts. And then, you know, because in the aftermath of that, of course, we had the Janus decision come down, which made you know, university and our union that much more conservative, or kind of, you know, much more walking on eggshells, right, instead of going more aggressive. And then now we see the rounds of retrenchments in the midst of the kind of, you know, the COVID outbreak. So, you know, and you know, I've listened into some of the meetings that I've, you know, even at my local, and the deference that is being paid to management at this point is really difficult. So we're going to have a show. We're going to bring some folks on. They're going to talk about that. Right. And, you know, at the same time is like, you know, everybody should understand is I have, sorry about that. I have an investment in the union being strong, right? I have an investment in maintaining a strong, organized faculty, right? And it never is easy to talk about, you know, what happens when you kind of talk about failure, especially in a kind of more public space. But I think that, you know, I'd like to, again, broach some of those conversations here, because I think we need to have them. It's astonishing what's going on, really, folks. So we'll get back to that in some future episodes.
So
go ahead. Sorry.
So Emily Skopoff.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about Democrats punching left earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, continued to punch left recently. Quote. It is not for me to tell black people or people of color how to protest, dot, 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 dot. But what I can tell them.
But let me pull out my whiteness and let me show you a little bit what whitey can say.
But what I can tell them is the consequences it will have for someone like me. And then it's up to them whether or not they can care to accommodate that.
Yeah, well, let's talk about, like, what the consequences really of someone like her has on kind of like black and brown communities across the state, right?
This is like radical white feminism, stereotyping at its worst. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like she is playing into like all those cards of just like radical white like hypocrite.
How's feminist. That radical? That's not radical.
No, not that. But I mean, like that, like white. Okay, that white feminist,
it's
like
liberal suburban, feminism.
Yeah, like that. People have just been talking about consistently over the past like several years. Like, you know what I mean? Like that, and it's just like, yeah. Thank you for correcting me on that.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's that like it's
radical feminists understand these connections.
Yeah, but it's this whole entire argument that like we've seen play out with like Indivisible and others, that like. It's about white issues in the suburbs where like people like Scopoff are from, and that they are really like that fucking blind. This like fucking blind to like making these changes or like seeing this in front of them. Like you lost two fucking races. Like this is not like your space to say this shit. Like, you know what I mean? You're just making yourself look worse.
Well, but I mean, and you don't really, this is the power that white identity politics has, right? Is because it can look invisible, right? Well, it's just me. This is going to have an impact on me. It's like, well, you're talking about preserving a particular kind of identity and fighting for that identity, right? Fighting for all that stuff that means. But because we are so freaking backwards in the ways that we think about, say, race and race relations and shit like that in this country, the minute you start kind of like calling someone out on that, they go like, oh, they like run and say, they can't believe you're being unfair and all this and run, and they get defended for it.
And it's also like this whole entire argument is like fucking insane. Like you're going after the people who you relied on the most to A, win this election, you know, this election for Biden, you know, like black and brown voters are pretty much like what pushed Biden over the edge. And then B, like these people are bearing the brunt of this fucking pandemic. While like, you know, people like Emily Scopoff have the, you know, the resources to get away from it, while like, you know, black and brown people are the, you know, the people who are running these organizations that we just talked about, Refinery 29. Like this is the face of the labor movement, right? Like you are seeing like the attacks of like the Republican Party going after black and brown votes. And now you have like people like Scopoff going after the base. Because they didn't like defund the police slogan. Like you're telling black people how to protest.
Yeah, and I just don't understand.
And you're telling your base how to respond to state-sanctioned violence that has been subjugated upon them for like 400 years. Like,
you know, it's just
so fucked up of an argument for Democrats.
Especially when it's in this disciplining way. I mean, the thing is like, look. This is the tragedy of this, though, right? I mean, the tragedy of it is like, there's been such advances in terms of how we talk about the building power on the left and progressives, right? We talked about intersectionality, which is like the contribution of feminists, right? For the most part, and talking about intersectionality in kind of really kind of concrete ways, and to have these kind of statements come out, it's like it does damage. Right. The blindness does damage. Yeah. And like this is what sucks about it is like, and it's also like I don't like want to be in a position to take anything away from Emily Scopoff for the good work that she's done. But you got to understand is that when you do this,
you're just setting your like
what your
brand name on damn.
You're not just your brand name. It actually does damage to building power.
Yeah.
I mean, it reinforces a very specific kind of dominant cultural narrative, right? Especially when if you're sitting in, say, black and brown communities, and you're looking at, I mean, who the hell am I to talk? But you're looking at black and brown communities and saying, this is kind of what you hear all the time. Wait your turn. Be good. You know, you got to do what's good for me. You got to serve me.
You have to accommodate
me.
My race in suburban Pittsburgh.
Right, but because you can imagine, County. Like, say for example, there's a
while
really...
like while Summer Lee's constituent was murdered by the cops, like Antoine Rose was shot in the back 5 times.
Yep,
you know Antoine Rose was Summer Lee's constituent. You know Summer Lee has brought up Antoine Rose's mother to the Capitol multiple times. You know,
right? Because like where is
to
it?
Remember the murder of right. of. Like her son.
Well, this is why I brought up that constituent. Right. This is why you remember like last week I talked about that piece in the Atlantic, right? I mean, it's like, you know, or I don't know if it was the Atlantic. It was like, but that profile basically is looking at what was going on, say, in Milwaukee, right? African American communities in Milwaukee. When they're talking about why what that experience is like and how that translates into kind of, say, political action, right? And the messaging and so on. And the thing is, like, where is the reverse, right? This is what bothers me more than anything else. It's like, where is that kind of like critical listening or whatever you want to call it that goes in and says, well, why might language like defund the police resonate in those communities, right? And you guess what? If you haven't been paying attention for the past several years, right? If you haven't paying attention to the Black Lives Matter, right? And you still can't get it through your freaking thick head about why it is that like that kind of discourse matters and the urgency of action is now, right? Then that's a problem. Because like there's a good conversation that can have, right? If I want to actually build power and I had this goes back to AOC's critiques, right? About you know, having a built-in investment in communities and infrastructure and saying like, look, the hard conversations are we have a Democratic Party that is in a sense an umbrella organization for a whole like range of different interests and things. It's not like the Republicans have it easy to a certain degree because they're a white identity party, right? They're a white identity party that's propped up by the rich, right? And that kind of utilizes kind of like all white identity as a way to kind of mobilize and kind of maintain its power. That's who they are. But the Democrats, in a sense, are not that. There's not one particular identity, but that's exactly where its power is. And so there's good conversations to actually be having, right, about how do we begin to balance this stuff in ways that we are kind of organizing effectively to represent these kind of different communities and recognizing that there's going to be different messaging in some districts, right? And that's fine. But that different messaging, it's not an all or nothing thing.
Yeah, like the response of the Democratic Party was to tamp down the defund the police rhetoric instead of co-opting it into something that was more palpable for the public.
The Biden campaign essentially did this. If you look at the Democratic convention and the Democrat, do you see all the signage and all the images in the back of the? Oh, that's right, you didn't watch it. But no. But I mean, all the imagery is have they had images from Black Lives Matter protests. Right, they utilized Black Lives Matter imagery, iconography, and activists, right, as a way of signaling this is we are. Joe Biden says, the Black community has always been there for me, and I'm going to be there for them.
But then he comes out and talks about looting in right. Philadelphia instead of the.
This is right.
Instead of the police officer murdering someone.
Exactly right, and so that's the tension that we're in here. Right. And it's, you know, again, that kind of stuff is just, you know, it just frustrates me because it's like that sends us backwards. Right. That sends us backwards. So, yeah. So the last thing I want to say is like there's been, you know, again, the explosion of COVID and you got the new guidelines going out. It's like, look, you know, I don't know what people's plans are, but, you know, I had plans. It was going to be a short travel. We weren't going to go and gather with lots of people or anything like this. It was just going to be like kind of immediate family or the people that we've been like, you know, whatever, potting with. And we canceled those plans because of the regulations that came out in Pennsylvania and the regulations that came out in New Jersey. The regulations that came out in New York, right? Ones that came out, you know, all around. And so we're going to be home. And I think that I feel you when you say you need a break, right? I can speak for at least me, my family. I think we needed a break. We needed to just do something different to get out of this freaking rut. But, you know, got to suck it up. Right. And look at ways of kind of, you know, redoing this and kind of keeping safe. And like, you know, I think this is, you know, why I kind of highlighted that stuff about, you know, see like, you know, Dianne Feinstein and Gavin Newsom kind of like showing that the different rules apply to them. Right. Why that's so problematic for me is because you got to, you know, rules are the rules. And if we're going to keep each other safe, then we got to actually do that. So there we go. So I am. Please, everybody,
please
share this.
What's breaking news?
What is the breaking news?
Trump administration is having conversations with inviting Pennsylvania Republicans to the White House this weekend.
Yeah, I heard that there was rumors about that this morning, but that's actually now it's out there.
Yeah. They absolutely do not have the authority to do an elector coup.
Yeah.
in this state, but they're going to try it.
Right. Well, my friend Ben. Hey, Ben, if you're listening, see you on Facebook Messenger later on today. Because I know he's going to be on this snap. There we go. All right. Well, there you go. The coup continues. Slow march
off
forward.
To the happy part of the let's go.
Off with her head. Exactly. Oh, my God. All I got to say. Wait, I think I need I think I need it. Well, this is what I would say.
I'm doing the best I can.
It's like it's not very much. But I wanted to see the I'm not going to be able to find it, am I? No, that's okay. I had a nice little sound drop for this, but I can't seem to find it. No. Oh, well.
Also, anyway. Results of this election will be certified on Monday. That's all they're doing is trying to fuck with the certification process.
Yep. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. All right, everybody. We're going to go in today's last call. Remind you that you can help support the show by going to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for as little $5 a month. Or just go to paypal.me/rcpress and put a little tip jar, any amount in our little tip jar. That's fantastic. All right, we'll be back right after this quick break with this week's Last Call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody, to this week's Last Call. We talk beer news, we talk space news, all sorts of fun stuff. A couple little tidbits of space news because I need it. SpaceX officially launched its first crewed mission to the International Space Station from the Kennedy Space Center. They arrived successfully. It was a successful launch. There are 4 astronauts on this. There are 3 astronauts from the U.S. and 1 astronaut from Japan. This marks the kind of march forward in galactic capitalism, once again, for the privatization of space. I gotta love it. But it was pretty cool. The astronauts, I actually kind of geeked out on a little bit. I watched the launch on Saturday night with my kids. And I was psyched to see when they did a little interview from the capsule, give everyone a tour. They had little baby Yoda on board. So there you go. That's my little space news for there. Other cool news was that astronomers proposing this huge telescope on the moon. Basically, you think you get out of the Earth's atmosphere. You are in a position to, you have much more, say, clear sight moving forward. And they're talking about this huge, like, liquid mirror over 300 feet in diameter. They look at it's studying the origins of the Big Bang. Right? So the idea, you put this enormous, you're not inhibited by gravity. You're also kind of like grounded to a certain degree, right? Since you're on the moon as opposed to, like Hubble, which is a kind of satellite one. So the plans are in the works already to start putting this stuff together. And this was 2028 now, I guess. They've kind of booted, as we talked about last week. They've moved the expectation is that under Biden administration, they're going to move the bar a little bit by saying, okay, now we're not going to do the 2024. Probably not going to do this. The House has a bill that's going forward calling for it in 2028. So that's probably the more realistic timeline. And I'll just mention this now. This is one thing we'll have to come back and looking at the what is going on with the Chinese space program, because China is basically, they're going full-fledged ahead. And so this kind of, talking about this development right here, the ultimately large telescope that they're planning on at the University of Texas. I don't, you know, if we see this gap in this, in the kind of the space program in the U.S., I could totally see China taking the initiative and setting up that first lunar base. And I'm not setting that up as kind of like, you know, oh no, we need to have another kind of like Cold War or space race or something like this. But it's a practical concern. I mean, I don't think the question is whether or not we're going to see further space exploration and kind of, you know, settlements on the moon. The question is when and who. And the question is that, do we have kind of the ability to kind of to take part in that? And there's a lot of issues in there. I told Sean this before, is that I'm reaching out to a couple of people who've been doing some writing on this. You know, I add this in the last call as kind of a little kind of fun bit, talk about space news, talked about my, you know, galactic capitalism for a little bit. But there's other folks that have been doing a lot more kind of thoughtful writing and research on this that I'm hoping to kind of get some of them on the show at some point to check out. So there is that. Free Will Brewing, just a little stuff going on here. Free Will, they have their they don't have a whole lot of new releases for the holidays. Their big event is going to be that Ralphius that will be kind of announced tomorrow. I'll remind everybody, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, they will be releasing Ralphius for pre-sale. Let me get you the list in a second here. I don't know why that didn't come up, but sorry. it was for pre-sale basically, and they have an amazing list of options for Ralphius. I mean, Ralphius is just phenomenal on its own. But here's like just a kind of a small sampling of this. They've got come on, why won't this go? I'm having all sorts of internet issues today. So they have a bitter barrels aged Ralphius, chocolate orange Ralphius, cinnamon chili Ralphius, coconut chocolate or coffee, decadent chocolate, double barrel aged maple walnut, just the regular Ralphius, rum barrel aged Ralphius, rye whiskey barrel aged, 2 year aged, and Zin whiskey barrel. Man, it's going to be something else. So if you want to get your order in, they do sell out of some of the varieties pretty quickly. Tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, you basically go to freewillbrewing.store and you'll be able to order yours ahead for pickup. If you're looking to just get some cans, you don't want to, you know, you're not kind of getting the Ralphius. I heard, I got the apple pie mash, last week, and it's really nice. It's a lot less sweet than I expected. I thought it was going to have a real sweetness to it. A lot less sweet than I thought it was, but really good. You can also pick up Black is Beautiful. That is it's a porter. It's a coffee porter. That's kind of as part of the Black is Beautiful series that they hooked up with the Harris Family Brewery. So that's a great option. Actually support kind of Black-owned businesses too as well. Kind of get out there. It's a great drinking beer. I was also really pleased with another Roadblock. That is a Helles Bock Lager. Right. And I haven't been like had many lagers very much of late, but that was a really good one. I was surprised. It actually comes into like a 7. Let me to double check this before 6.8 ABV. But it's really nice. It's got a nice body to it. It was a good drinking beer. Nice alternative to kind of really hoppy IPAs. The other one that I kind of would recommend, as always, is the DDH Love Letter from the 90s. Absolutely phenomenal. I absolutely love that beer. The one new release for this week, especially this is actually good for the holidays. You don't want something that's super, super heavy. It's going to be nice, very kind of social kind of beer, even if you're not going to be socializing very much. This is a new one that they're going to add to their regular distribution, which according to Free Will, they're actually going to be having distributing. It's going to be available in stores too as well, not just at the brewery, but it's called Peel and Petal. And that is a wheat ale with orange, chamomile, and coriander. And that comes in at a very sessionable 5.2 ABV. That looks really good. I haven't tried that one yet, but I will be picking some of that up too as well. So that's my beer plugs for the week. What do you got going on, Sean?
Nothing really. I'm staying home. I'm staying up here for Thanksgiving, so that's pretty much it.
Staying up doing the Thanksgiving quarantine.
Yeah, I'm going to be making a chicken stock on Saturday or Sunday and have that in my apartment for future use. I think I'm going to make make a pork shoulder on Thanksgiving and some stuffing.
Nice.
And have a chicken stock around.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's so good. I saw this coming last week, but, you know, whatever. We're going to hold out options to be able to kind of go away. We were just going to go down the shore, right? We were going to say rent a place and like, it's like relatively cheap because nobody wants to go down there during then, right? Just to be kind of like away, right? And quiet, but, not going to happen. Just not going
to
happen.
So a nice little tweet just popped out. One of the Republicans who came down with COVID, Democrats didn't find out about this morning until they saw a Facebook post at 11 a.m. versus being notified by the caucus.
That's crazy.
Potential outbreak.
That's crazy.
So, yeah.
So anyway, so I think, so what I did is I went shopping this week, especially after we heard the restrictions were coming down, I just picked up, some turkey breasts and we're going to make that. Right.
Nice.
I didn't feel like, cause we're going to have a small gathering, you know, small gathering, like, me, my wife, my kids. Right. So
yeah, I mean, my family's still meeting for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just like my brother, sister-in-law, like, and then my parents and then my sister and the two kids. So, yeah. I mean, I still am not comfortable with it, but whatever.
No, people going to make choices.
My family is like headstrong on doing this simply because my brother brought all the stuff already for the turkey. Just like, whatever. I just don't feel safe traveling home, taking the train or having my parents come up just because of the stuff that's been going on in Harrisburg lately. And like the fucking Trump rallies are just blowing up everything in rural PA right now.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I guess happy Thanksgiving. That's what it feels like, you know. It's like
The Pennsylvania Republicans are now considering visiting Donald Trump this weekend.
There we go. Developing story, everybody. Stay awake. So there we go. Well, hey man, listen, I hope for what it's worth, I hope it's at least a safe and say peaceful Thanksgiving break. I know it's going to probably be pretty quiet in Harrisburg over the time too as well. Show notes for everybody. We will kind of almost 100% not be doing a show next week. Unless I just get really annoyed and irritated. I might be hopping on. I might just do it anyway.
Unless the coup happens.
Well, yeah, then it's going to be like, whoop, whoop, whoop. But I think that we'll take a little break for this. I might hop on and do a couple Facebook Lives this week. We'll see how that goes. Like I said, for Mondays from Out the Coop Live, we're not planning on a show, but there's a chance that I might do just a little, say, commentary session, depending on how things are going around here. So, but for everybody out there, please have a safe Thanksgiving. I hope you find some, say, moments of kind of calmness and joy in whatever you may be doing. If you are going to be gathering with other people, against all the recommendations and things like this, please, please, please be safe. And my biggest concern, of course, is that there's, wearing a mask to a Thanksgiving gathering is not going to make you a popular person, especially if you're in a room with other people without masks. The social pressure is going to be very large. And not even when people are sitting around basically saying, why are you wearing that mask? Not like that. But even if just sitting around, if nobody else has a mask on and you have a mask on, the tendency of human beings is to take the mask off. But I don't know. Did you see, oh, this is the last thing I'll say about this. Did you see those diagrams that came out by, from Eldia?
No,
about
I didn't.
The spread. There's these scenes, right? They basically say, okay, let's take a room of six people or seven people. Right. And you know, kind of a good sized living room. You're sitting in there, like in that room with no mask for 6 hours. One person is infected, right? And they're standing over by one side of the room. How many other people in that room are going to be infected? And the answer is all of them, right? Is that every single one of them? How about if they're in that room talking to each other with masks on, right? 4 out of 6 will be infected, even when they're spread out 6 foot apart from each other. right? It's because you're locked in an inside space over a prolonged period of time. The risk is high. So be careful, everybody, all right? Cool. All right, man, anything else for the good of the order?
No, nothing else.
All right, just lock in for the coup,
another
man.
Another day in fucking paradise.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Want to give that special thanks once again to Jonathan Mann for our outro song. There are no people in the future. It seems darker than I'd want it to be today. But happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you on the other side. All right. Stay safe. Stay vigilant. Thank you.
See ya.